This is a Raj call, and this is the third episode of my podcast. And I'm going to take us a bit down memory lane. I'm going to show my age now, right now. So those of you can see on video already know who the guest is, but those who are listening on Apple or Spotify, I'm going to just take you down memory lane, just tell you a little story. So when I was 16, one of my most favourite albums, there was about two or three punk albums at that time. One was Excellencies Are You Ready, Got To Be Done, love those. But there was another album, which actually, the fact that I love singing and doing singing today is because of Punjabi Dance Nation. That was one of my all-time favorite. Even today, it's probably one of my best albums. And that's why I'm going to introduce our very special guest. I'm so enthusiastic. I'm so excited. And this is a bit of a fanboy moment for me, to be fair, honestly. Because I've grown up listening to your music, and the reason I'm into singing and even into the classical side of it, because of yourself. That's, you're one of the main reasons for UK Bhangra. So I'm just going to start off just saying that Punjabi Dance Nation was one of my favourite bands, one of my favourite albums ever. And the basis of this podcast was just for me to find out more about you, because you've been a massive influence on in my singing, in my musical career. Even though my music career just restarted recently because of gaps. Well, we'll talk about that another time. We've actually met a few times before. You probably don't remember, but we met at a wedding recently, and I was asked to sing, but I was a bit reluctant anyway. It was Sunil's wedding when you performed it. Yes. I've got another thing where we performed. I managed to find it. I was throwing away some of my clothes, and I found this. Those of you can see.
Oh my gosh! Yeah.
Willing Hall, 2010. So that's me there. That's you there. So.
2010. Wow.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm gonna keep this. Yeah. Do you remember we had those? There was massive, like life size banners of us in that.
Okay.
Yeah,
I remember. Yeah.
In Wollongong. So that's that. So that's the basis of the podcast, and I want to find out a bit more about Shin, about you from a fanboy perspective. And I'm sorry, I am a fanboy. I'm not gonna sort of. Anyway, so let's start talking a bit about your background. How did you get into singing? Did you take formal training?
No. When I started singing, I realized that I had a knack for music. Really early in my life, right? I think I was probably about 5 or 6 when I realized. How that came about is my dad was a big Bollywood film music buff, right? We used to watch Bollywood films every weekend. We'd be down in the cinema, me and my brothers, mom and dad, and we'd phone our uncles up as well. Yo, where's the new film at? Which cinema? Because there's 4 or 5 cinemas in Birmingham, ain't it? And they'd all agree which cinema they're going to go to, which films they're going to watch. And we'd all go down the cinema. And I'm talking about the 60s, right?
Okay.
And we were always growing up watching these films and at home listening to records, listening to the big spool-on-spool tapes. And Dad was always into the music, yeah? So the music was always playing. And subconsciously, this music was ingraining itself within me, right? And how I realized this was, we went to Blackpool once, right? And even to this day, I distinctly remember this moment, right? On the way, we went to watch the illuminations that they have at Blackpool, right?
Yeah, Blackpool
lights, yeah. On the way back from Blackpool, we're in the back of a van, right? And I'm trying to go to sleep, I remember. And while I'm trying to sleep, I start humming this song, right? And I suddenly realized that I know the whole song. This is about 5, 6, or possibly 7, right? I realized I know all the music, I know all the melody, right? I didn't know all the words at that time completely, but I knew all the melody and every single piece of the music. I could hum it in my mind, and I shocked myself, and I could hear it very vividly, very clear, all the strings and the mandolin pieces and everything. And I was kind of surprised myself, whoa, I know this. And then I started to learn other songs as well. Other songs, I realized that I knew other songs as well. I could hum all those songs. And then I started singing the words as well. And I learned to speak earlier in my life, Punjabi and Hindi, by singing these Bollywood songs and Punjabi film songs that we used to watch, right? And that was a very early realization that I'm good at doing this music business, this music stuff. I'm quite good at retaining it and then reproducing it. And then when I was about 12, 13, a mate of mine from school used to go down the local Gurdwara, right? And he used to learn rags from the Gyani at the Gurdwara. It was Ramgariya Gurdwara.
Okay, the one in Jewelry Quarter.
Jewelry Quarter, yeah, great.
Yeah.
And there used to be a Gyani there called Gurdayal Singh Kalsi, right? And he was into his classical stuff. And so I used to tag along with him and we'd just go down the Gurdwara. I said, I want to learn music, you know? And he said, boy, why don't you come with me? And we'll go down the Gurdwara and he teaches rags. So I used to go down there, learn some rags and bits and pieces. And I never had a bhaja, right? So I went to my mate. And my mate used to say, can I borrow your bhaja for a couple of weeks just to practice these rags and stuff, right? And you won't believe it, I had that bhaja for 2 years. Until I managed to get a hold of one myself, right? He didn't mind because he was into music, but not that much. As crazy as I was, you know. And I'd always be on my bhaja. I'd come home from school or whatever. And I'll go straight up into the attic, get on my bhaja, start working out songs and tunes, doing my rags, practicing scales and stuff. So it really started, kind of kicked off quite early for me, you know. And then just one thing led to another. And, you know, I'm here today.
So how old were you when you would do this stuff, the rags on the bhaja, when you first had the bhaja?
I was about 12. About 12, 13 when I started that, going to the Gurdwara and learning rags properly from the Gyani. But then, you know, obviously I was well into film music as well. So I'd tag along with my mates if there was ever a pop. It also like at family weddings and stuff, you know, we were all sitting in a room because family weddings weren't that big back in the day, right? You'd get
there were school halls, weren't they?
20, 30 guys in a room, you know, having a night before party, you know, and they'd say, oh, Mundia Gana Sana, you know, Shindia Gana Sana or something. And it used to be Bollywood songs. I'd sing like the Bollywood song and stuff. And they'd love it. And I started realizing, yeah, man, you know, I'm enjoying this kind of stuff. I like this. You know, and as I got a bit older, there was a friend of mine, Harjinder Singh Mataru, who's an excellent tabla player. And he still teaches today. He still teaches in arts councils and in schools. And he's the guy that actually got me going with this kind of stuff, really. He'd grab me and take me along to some gigs that he used to play at. Student union gigs, little private parties, Mayfield parties, and I'd tag along with him, go down to these parties, he'd come with me, and you know, we'll get you on for a couple of tracks if we get a chance, right? And I'd just be waiting for my turn to come, and they'd invite me to come on and sing a few songs. He'd play tabla, someone had played bhaja, and I'd sing a few songs, you know. And I used to like gate crash these parties with him all the time and just try and get a chance to sing in front of people all the time. So, you know, the hunger was there all the time to want to perform, to want to get out there and do something, you know. And then, like I say, you know, the whole thing gathered momentum from those years. It started off at that time, yeah.
So did you carry on from there? Like, sort of, you learnt a bit about the classical music in the Gurdwara. Did you have a start after that or...?
Well, I learned from Gurdayal Singh, honey. And then I didn't actually get an ustad till much later on, until when DCS started, right, the band. This was in 1981. Around 1983, there was a guy in the band called Charlie. D, Danny, C, Charlie, and S, Shin. And Charlie had a cousin of his who had learnt from Muhammad Rafi, right?
Wow.
And Muhammad Rafi Saab is my idol, right? I worship that man and his singing, right? Even to this day, whenever I hear a Rafi song, I get goosebumps all over my body. That man is just amazing.
Yeah, there's no other singer like him. There's no other singer like
him. You know, and this guy had spent time with Muhammad Rafi Saab in the recording studios, watching him sing, learning from him as well, right? So he knew, he had a lot of knowledge. I used to live here in Birmingham. His name was Mehboob Chauhan. And he'd sung songs in Bollywood and he'd sung songs in the Pakistani film industry, right? So I became quite close with him, quite good friends with him. And he was my first teacher. I wouldn't say like ustad, but he became one of my first teachers when I was about 22. And he taught me a lot of stuff which was relevant to the way they sing in the Bollywood film industry, the way Rafi Saab used to do his riyaz and the kind of rags that they work with, and techniques that they use in Bollywood singing, right? And then a few years later, I got a classical teacher as well, Ustad Ajit Singh Mutla Shiji, who's here in Birmingham. And then an Ustad in India as well, Baldev Narang Saab, who's no longer with us, unfortunately, passed away last year. But Narang Saab is also my Ustad. He's in Jalandhar, or he was in Jalandhar, as I say. And yeah, so, you know, it's been a good journey. You know, I've had some good teachers on the way who've given me the right kind of pointers to put me in the right direction. And I've also learned from Western classical music teachers, opera teachers, singers as well. Because the two techniques of singing are very different, right? And in Western music, the main thing I got from Western music was how to use your voice properly.
And projection.
Voice production, and how to support your voice properly so that you can sing for a long time and still sustain your voice, not damage your voice and not ruin it. The best way to use your voice, because we do a lot of performing on stage, we're standing up, we're, you know, jumping around, doing what we do. You've got to be able to conserve your energy and conserve your voice and not strain yourself and not overdo it. So there's certain ways and techniques that they tell you that you can apply to your singing to help you to do this properly, you know? And it's very important to know this stuff in order to get longevity in your career.
Yeah, definitely. So, guys, those are who are listening. So, Jim, what advice would you give them if someone wanted to start singing? So I'm hitting my mic. So what advice would you give someone starting singing? Because I think there are some very good singers who are not trained as well, aren't they? So, but in order to get to the gist of it, you need training, don't you?
I mean, There's lots of natural born singers out there, right? I was a natural born singer as well. But you have to learn the craft properly if you want to get, like I say, if you want to get longevity, if you just want to be a party singer who sings at, you know, the local wedding party or your mate's wedding, or you sing in the bathroom, whatever, that's fine. You don't need to get training, right? But if you want to make a career out of it and get longevity and be able to stand your ground with other singers in the industry, right, who are out there, and compete with those singers. Because if you want to be a professional singer, you've got to compete with the likes of, you know, the big singers that are out there.
Absolutely.
And be able to stand around, you know, and deliver your music properly. So it sounds professional and it sounds well done. You know, you've got to learn the craft. You've got to learn how to sing properly, you know, and spend your time doing your riyaz. For singers, because this is it's a physical thing. It's like anything else. If you want to build your body, if you want to become a bodybuilder, you got to get down the gym every day. You got to work out properly to get the results. If you want to be the best football player in the world, you got to get on the football field. You got to get a ball. You got to kick it around for about 5 or 6 hours a day, or at least 3 or 4 hours a day, to kind of get some kind of visible result in your playing. If you're just going to go out there, kick it around for 10 minutes and then come back in, that ain't going to do jack. You know, you're not going to improve. You're not going to develop. You're not going to learn. So same with singing. Because it's a physical instrument. You've got to work it every day. You've got to work it for at least 3 or 4 hours, a couple of hours every day to start with until you learn it properly for a good 10 years or so. Once you've learned it properly and you learn your craft, you know how to use your voice, you're on your way.
Absolutely. And you know, when I first started singing, it was very hard for me to find a teacher. I really struggled, even in Birmingham, like someone, I've had three teachers in my life, but sort of, I found it really hard. But today, it's even easier because you could like have a teacher from India, purely classical, over Zoom. And that's how learn now. That's how I learn now. I'm learning pure classical. But the one difference one difference I found with pure classical is that I'm not allowed to use the harmonium anymore.
Oh, right. Yeah.
I have to just bump it up. And I'm really struggling with it because all that time I've been taught with harmonium. So over lockdown, I started learning from a pure classical Gaura 9 in India over Zoom.
Okay. And, who do you learn from, Chris?
Lal Se Karana, then Jaipur.
Okay.
Not Jaipur, it's Nagpur. Sorry, I always get mixed up. Then Nagpur, But he's moved to Kolkata now. So there's seven generations of classical singers and tabla players and whatnot.
Nice. So that's great.
But the thing I struggle with is that because I can't use the harmonium now, I have to work out each note in my head. So I'm just stuck on CD and E at the moment. I'm just doing the interval training. So I've got this software called Earmaster, which helps me practice intervals.
Okay.
So if I know, okay, I've jumped, how many sort have I jumped up? How many sort have I gone down? And I have to know that by heart, because that's what he requires me to do. And
yeah.
It's like me going back to basics, to be honest. You know, it's really, really hard. I didn't realize how hard pure classical was without the harmonic. I've used harmonium as a crutch before, but I can't do that. So what's your opinion on that sort of that kind of?
You know, that kind of training is really hard, and that's quite heavy. That's quite a heavy end to be thrown into, right? I've spent time with lots of classical teachers, and Ajoy Chakrabarty, who's from Kolkata as well. You know, and I had a couple of one-on-one classes with him when he was here, and he told me to practice that kind of stuff and scales. He like says, sing as many scales as you can. Right, just keep singing scales all the time, because there's nothing like to the limits as well, from your low to your high.
Yeah,
you know, so that you can work your way through all your break points in your voice. It's all very important. And I mean, to conquer sur and find the right sur, right, when you're singing with a tanpura and be able to sing any sur anywhere, Ajoy Chakrabarty is the master of that thing. Oh my God, you can give him a kala. Bella Kala, C sharp, right?
Yeah.
Any note on that harmonium, and even between those notes, he'll be able to sing notes. You know, there's 12 notes in an octave. He'll sing any note you want.
Yeah.
Right? He'll sing in between those as well, if you want.
In pure classical, there's 24, isn't there?
Shrutis as well.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's amazing. You know, and it's endless, it's boundless. You know, it depends how far you want to take it. You know, you can. I know. There are some amazing singers out there who have spent their whole lives just practicing, and they are amazing singers. But does anybody know them?
No.
Has anybody ever heard of them? No, you will not know them. You will not know them, but they are amazing singers. And it's a shame. But it's a shame for us, because a lot of people won't get to hear them, but they're not bothered about that. They're not in it for the fame.
Mm.
They're in it for the music. Their life is dedicated to just conquering those 12 notes of that octave. And be able to sing it in any combination, any raga, any way they want to. You know, that's what their life dedication is about. Mm. And that is true art and true color. They've given their life to their music.
It's amazing, Shin, honestly, because, you know, I've never heard this side of this is why I was so excited about this interview, because I've never heard this side of your, I've heard your interviews, but never this depth.
It all depends on who's interviewing me.
Exactly.
You know about music, and you want to talk about this stuff. And I'm always ready to talk. I love talking about this kind of stuff and my experiences in it and what I've learned.
Exactly,
you know, and it's amazing. It's an ocean. You know, it's an ocean out there.
Yeah.
You know, you can spend one lifetime is not enough. As they say, you realize all this stuff. When you're reading it in books, you say, one lifetime is not enough to learn music. You think, nah, man, you know, one life, it's ages, you know, I can learn how to sing. But it's not so simple.
Yeah. I'll tell you the truth, right? Even though I've been learning the pure classical for about 2 years, and I can't sing one rag properly right from start to finish. I can't do it. I can't do the tanna properly. I can't do the ila properly. I can't do the bandish properly. Bandish I can probably just about do, but the rest I can't do properly. I'm embarrassed. I would be embarrassed to sing that rag cue.
Yeah. You know, if you were to speak to any teacher, anybody, right, whether it's Pandit Chakrabarty ji, whether it's if Nusrat Fateh Ali Khan Sahib, if he was still alive, right? If you said, Khan Sahib, can you sing a rag properly? He will say to you, no, I can't. Anybody will say to you, they cannot sing a rag properly the way that they would want to sing it. They cannot do it. They cannot achieve that point. Or they're still striving to get there.
Yeah.
Because there is no end point to this. Every time you get better, your endpoint increases. Right now, I can do this. When you get to that point, then you think, no, now I can do this. So you're never at that point of satisfaction where you can perfectly sing a rag and you're happy with it. You'll never get to that point.
So Thank you.
Try to get there. The journey is there.
You
have to make that journey. But you will find that your bar will always start getting higher and higher the better you get.
Yeah.
The bar rises with you all the time.
That's massive words of encouragement from someone you like yourself. And honestly, you start doubting yourself, and that's about get you had me the nikari danda but online. Yeah, some of the danda, right? Speed out to do them at. Like, so what I started doing, increasing them by one BPM, then another BPM.
That is the way to do it. You know, even the best people in the world work at it that way. You got to do it slow and steady. Yeah. Wins the race. Yeah. Not the fast boys. Slow and steady always wins the race. I mean, I was reading this article, and I've seen a couple of interviews as well from music directors in the film industry. They were saying that when Rafi Saab, right, who'd been singing in the industry for years, right, and Lataji even, when he used to learn a song, right, he'd learn it at half speed.
Yeah.
So he gets all the melody, note for note, in the beat, half speed, and all the murkiyan, tana, everything he's got to do, note for note, exactly the way he's got to do it. He'll learn it at half speed. And then once he's confident with that, then he'll do it at the proper speed. You think, wow, a man like him should just get it like that. But no, because there's so much bricky in there, they slow it down and they have to analyze it and learn it that way, slow it down completely. You know, so you can see everything clearly.
Yeah, and that's why it takes time, isn't it?
That's why it takes time. Yeah, that's why it takes time. Yeah.
So I'm going to move on from that side, even though I could sit here and talk to you all day about this classical stuff, because I'm actually learning so much from you, to be fair. And it's a massive privilege. So thank you again, really, honestly, from the bottom of my heart. It's a massive for me.
My pleasure. We should get together sometime.
I'd love to do that. I'd love to do that. So I'm going to start. I'm going to talk a bit about DCS. How did DCS form? You probably told people about this, but...
Yeah. Okay. DCS formed in 1981, right? 1980, Muhammad Rafi Saab died, right? And in 1981, there was a song competition held in Birmingham. It was to celebrate. It was for the 1 year anniversary of Rafi Saab passing away, yeah? And I wanted to enter that song competition. So I was looking for some musicians to help back me up to enter this competition, right? And the gentleman I mentioned earlier, Harjinder Singh Mataru, who's a tabla player, I went to him and said, look, yaar, mainu bande chahiye, I need to enter this competition. Can you help me out? He said, hey, yeah, I know some musicians, so we'll get them all together, right? And he pointed me in the direction of Danny and Charlie and a couple of other guys that I got together. Then I got all these boys together, and we formed a band, got together, rehearsed these songs, and we entered this song competition, right? And in that song competition, Mangal Singh from Chaag Pehchaan, they came first. They came first because they'd been singing for years before anyway. And this is the first time I went on stage, right? And it was at a place called Grove Cinema here on Dudley Road. It's not there anymore. There's a McDonald's there now, right? But we came second in that competition. And I remember when I was singing a song on stage, I finished singing that song, right? I sang two songs. One was Duniya Ke Rakhwale, and the other was Parda Hai Parda, right? I remember when I finished my performance, right, and the audience was clapping. It was a house full, right? There was about 800-900 people in there. Everyone was clapping. The adrenaline was flowing in my body. I had goosebumps all over, and feeling was fantastic. You know, a feeling of accomplishing something, that you've made a crowd happy, and they're enjoyed your music and they're clapping for you. And I remember while I'm standing on stage at that moment, I made a decision that this is what I want to do. I'm going to do this I want to make a career out of singing, out of music, out of performing, out of making music, right? And that night, when we loaded the van up with gear again, you know, we were driving home, I had a conversation with Danny and Charlie. They used to be in a band before that called Leo, which was a rock band. And they approached me and said, Shin, look, we came second today, but, you know, don't let it get you down. You know, this is just the beginning. He said, we want to make a band. Would you be interested in joining our band? And I said, yeah, definitely. Let's make a band. And he said, okay, we'll make a band. And we'll call it this, DCS, named after the initials of the members, founder members, Danny, Charlie, and Shin. And that night, in that van, on the way back from this song competition, DCS was born. So that's
amazing.
That was 1981, August sometime. I can't remember the exact date, but it was around August time in 1981. that we decided to make DCS.
That is phenomenal. But you've had like lots of musicians over the time, haven't you? So they've changed the musicians.
Yeah, musicians have come and gone in DCS, right? But the original lineup, like, you know, they were phenomenal musicians. Because back in the day, even with recordings, now it's all computers, right? We didn't have computers back in the day. We used to have a click track that we used to play. We just put the click track on so everyone stays in one beat, right? And then the musicians would all be wired up and we'd play live to record.
Yeah.
Right? But we wouldn't all record together how it would be. We'd get like the drums, the bass guitar, and the rhythm guitar, and a guide keyboard down first. So these three or four instruments would go down first onto the backing track, and I would sing guide vocals for
them. Yeah.
Right, yeah. So we'd all go in, record together, but the main instruments would go down one by one. So we'd have to keep playing the song until we got it exactly right in time with the click track. And it was quite difficult, first of all, but then we got into it. But the musicians were so good in our band in the early days. Like we had Bala on guitar, Dave on drums, Raju on bass. You know, these boys were solid musicians. And then later on, they became pioneers. A lot of people who came into the industry after that used to copy these boys and picked up the way they played. These lads, they were amazing players.
Because there's a massive difference, isn't there, look, between how music is recorded now and it was then. I mean, recently I did some live sessions. So we recorded all that live with a live guitarist, live bass, live keys. And it took us 2 weeks of practice to get the one, two songs done. We recorded it live. It's very different to how it was then. I mean, what's your opinion on that? Like, sort of how it is then, how it is now?
Yeah, I mean, it is very different. Now, you know, with the advent of computers and samplers and auto tuners and all these gadgetry, right? It's so easy. It's easy. You don't have to be the best singer in the world now to come out of a studio with an album record in your hand sounding really good, half decent, right? You can do it. But back in the day, it was all live. There was no auto tuners. There was nothing. You had to sing in tune and you had to play in time. And your guitar has to be in tune and your keyboards are going to be, you know, you're going to be playing all your pieces. So you had to be good musicians. And the thing with us was, and with most of the bands of that time, it's like we were gigging every weekend. We'd be gigging, right? We were doing like 80, 90, probably 100 shows, over 100 shows a year. When we were at our peak, DCS, we're doing over 100 shows a year, which is like, you know, it was crazy. It was a crazy time for doing shows. So a lot of our training and a lot of the tightness within the band, playing together all the time, every week in and out, we were playing and rehearsing as well at the same time. While we're doing two shows every weekend, we're rehearsing as well, you know? Right. And so as a band, we became very tight with each other musically. As individuals, we knew each other. We just had to look at each other and we know what we mean musically, what we're going to do next, you know, what we're doing with the music. So that kind of translated into the studio as well. So when we were in the studio working, 2-3 takes probably, we'd be done because we're so tight with each other. We'd work something out. And the lads were so quick that they'd remember these chords, you know, they'd remember the arrangement of a song and 2-3 takes and the backing track's laid, you know. So it was working a lot out on the road, playing live with one another, really helped us to become really tight and good musicians.
Do you remember the point in history when it actually changed? Like, so in the 90s, maybe, I'm guessing it was probably mid-90s or something, because you had like Punjabi Dance Nation and that. Was that live or was that semi?
Punjabi Dance Nation was part live, but at that time, computers were coming in.
Yeah.
So a lot of the drum and... In the early days, it was like mainly drum beats and stuff that was recorded onto computers.
Yeah.
Because you get all the samples for the drum beats. So we did a lot of the drum beats for Punjabi Dance Nation using loops and drum beats. And then Juggy would do the overdubs live, the rolls and stuff. So it was recorded that way, yeah. But there was still a lot of live stuff going on. The bass would go down live. The guitars would go down live, you know, and keyboards would all be played live. So it was a combination of all that kind of stuff. And so, Punjabi Dance Nation, a lot of people used DAW samples. But we recorded a track on there called DCS meets TDF, the DAW Foundation, right? And it was with a guy called Johnny Kelsey. Amazing DAW player.
Yeah, phenomenal.
Right? Amazing player. And he's done so much for the bank, the Bangla industry, as regards DAW players. He's got a school which still runs the DAW Foundation. It's got up and down the country. He's got affiliations in virtually every city. And Johnny came to the studio one day when we were recording. He was in Birmingham while we were working on this album. And while he was there, we had a conversation. Well, why don't we do a track where we're featuring a lot of door players on our album, right, on this one song? And I had this song that I wanted to do. I spoke to Johnny about it. And we got 16 door players into a recording booth.
Man.
Luckily for us, it was a big recording studio as well that we used to work at, right? And it had a massive room in there. We got 16 door players in there. And the clatter that they made, mic'd them all individually, put mics in between, and tried to isolate them as much as we can, right? And the sound that we got on that album, on that track, was just massive. Just massive. And the stuff that they played, those door players, it's a masterclass for any door player in the world. If you can play the Doors on that, if any Dolly can play that song, right, on the door, he's a competent door player. He's a good door player. It became like a benchmark for all door players. So if DCS were ever playing at a wedding, right, we get door players coming up to ask us, "Buddy, you know, when you do that song, can I jump on and play with you?" They don't want to come and show us, "Yo, we can play this song, you know, whatever." So it was like that became a benchmark for how good you are as a door player. Wow. But it was amazing. It was amazing, yeah.
Wow, that is phenomenal. So I'm just going to move on because we haven't got much time left from our respective time. So how do you think, like, sort of Bhangra, UK Bhangra scenes changed from then and now?
Oh, Bhangra, music, the UK scene has changed a hell of a lot, right? Back in the day, the bands of the UK, right, were the pioneers of the Bhangra music sound, right? We made Bhangra popular all over the world.
100%,
not the artists from India were very inspirational, right? And they were very popular in their own right. But the UK Bhangra bands brought something new to the music. We took it to another level.
Absolutely.
Especially bands like DCS. We just, because we're born in the UK, right? And our parents are from India. So we had a proper sound, proper fusion. We married the Western sound with the Eastern sound.
Yeah.
And loved it. People connected so much with our, we had an album called 1, 2, 3, Go, which was a proper fusion album. You know, we pushed the boundaries on the album and it just clicked with everybody and really clicked with the youth of this country, with the youth of America, all these NRIs, kids that were born abroad.
Including me.
Including yourself, right? And many generations after that, you know. And we sold those albums and those songs and those sounds back to India. And they lapped it up. They loved those albums. They loved those sounds and they loved those songs. And it influenced the music that was being made there at that time. You know, they started getting to the Western music. They started using these drum beats and these kind of Western sounds and influences like reggae, pop, you know, dance music, hip hop, R&B. And then when the DJs in this country came, like people like Bally Sagu, people like PNC, they then took it again to another level and started influencing music back there again. At this time, what's happened? The tables have turned. Now, India, it's mainly the singers from India. They're leading the way.
Yeah.
Why is that? Because there's no singers, you know, emerging from the UK scene anymore. They're not here anymore. You know, even the singers that are coming out of Canada, they're all boys that are from India and they've gone to Canada to live.
Yeah, yeah.
They're not born in Canada. And the singers coming from here are not born here.
Yeah.
You know, we need UK-born talent to emerge and take over the scene again. You know, it's a shame to see the scene in the UK going down. And unfortunately to say, singers like myself, when we hang up our microphones, and that day's going to come soon, you know, the scene here is really going to suffer badly. It's really going to suffer because at the moment we're still trying to push things. There's still music producers here, you know, you've still got people like, you know, PMC working, True School, you know, you've got these kind of music producers, DJ Vix and these kind of guys still doing stuff in this country. There's so many producers still here, but there's no new ones emerging, you know, and we need to keep that music scene alive.
Yeah.
And people need to come out and you know, make music. I don't know what it is. I don't know why the scene has suffered so much here.
But I personally, this is just my opinion, I personally, there's a few things. Like, one, the internet changed things. Because before, people in India didn't, or around the world, didn't have access to the music we had. Internet suddenly influenced them. They could do everything that we could do.
Once
they got access to it. So that was one of them. And the other thing, I think, like, you see, the UK, I think it lost its identity because we had a lot of DJs doing Gulp's production and stuff. And, you know, and it was the same sound where where this is just my opinion. I'm not an expert in this. I found the same sound that where as when it was your time in the bands, every album, every song was like phenomenal because you had a lot of live guitars, rock influences, hip hop. Yeah, it was just next level. Yeah, yeah. Where in the 2000s, everything music became very samey for the UK.
Yeah, very samey.
Because you were using the same sample, the same doll beat, the same tumbi beat, the same tumbi sample. You know, you were using the same things, and I think that was the issue with it.
I believe that. I mean, back in the day, all the bands had their own sound. They had their own individual style of playing. They had their own style of songs, competition, the kind of songs they're going to sing. You know, Up Nasty Gee, they're going to sing this kind of a song. DCS have got this kind of a song. Alap have their own sound, you know, Premi have got their sound, you know, Hiro have their unique style. You know, so everybody had their own different individual.
Exactly, yeah.
Now, like you say, a lot of the DJs, a lot of these producers all over the world are all sounding the same. I mean, 90% of Bhangra songs, probably even to this day, are made with the Gidya Dirania loop.
Exactly, yeah. And you know that Tumbi sample that comes up? And you know that Tumbi sample? Sorry, after you, I'm interrupting you.
Yeah, I was going to say that door sample is still going around. Door look sample, I'm still using it, and it's still busting up the dance floors.
Exactly, and there's that Tumbi sample that everyone uses now. Have you heard it? There's one little the Dr. Zeus Tumbi sample. I've used every single Bhangra song in India. The thing I struggle with, shit, I try to like in my music, and it's not to everyone's taste because I try to do something a bit different. I call it alternative Bhangra now because it's just. Because it's away from the mainstream, but not many people like it because I put a lot of electronic influences in it. You know, what I like house music and stuff in my music, it's not taken up, which I understand why because it's not to everyone's ear. But I'm trying to do something a bit different that's not using the same samples. But it's hard to get people to listen to it.
Yeah. I know. I do understand it. It's very frustrating. I feel the same way. You know. I've kind of switched off from Bhangra music now. I don't listen to it that much because it all sounds the same. Everything is the bloody same and they're all copying each other. You know what I mean? No one wants to make music or experiment with music. You've got 12 notes in an octave. There's more than four notes in an octave. Come on, man. Use more notes.
Yeah.
Use more music. Look how many instruments there are in the world. Use them. Look how many tempos there are of music in the world. Bhangra, you know, okay, we got Bhangra and everyone's, this song is a hit in 92 BPM. Right? Every song for the next 3 years is 92 BPM.
Exactly.
Come on, will you? You know, when we used to make songs in our album, we take you on a journey.
Yeah.
You know, there's different tempos, different styles, you know, different things going on in every song. We've got 10 songs on an album. Every song is different. And you're going on a journey with us through that whole album. You don't get that anymore. You don't get that anymore. I just got people, you know, like I say, music has become very, very simple. Like you say, it's a dolki loop and a tumbi loop, and you got a singer singing over it.
Yeah.
Basically, that's it, right? Yeah. And they might take a big bass on it, right? Oh. That bass is like very simple. It's not really, it doesn't take brains to play a bass like that. You know what I mean? You don't have to be a good player. Everything is so simple, so basic because. And the songs are getting shorter and shorter now. I've heard songs being released that are like not even 2 minutes long.
A minute and a half.
And they're becoming hits. And you think, what the hell, man? Yeah. What can you do in 2 minutes? When we used to make songs, our intro used to be nearly 2 minutes of a song before the words even come in. You know what I mean? And now the record company says, in 10 seconds, you got to get the words in. And the song, if the song doesn't click in 30 seconds, that's it. People don't want to hear it. And say, what kind of music are you making? And who are you making it for?
Let me tell you a story.
People are becoming too simple with the music. You know what I mean? They need to expand their mind a bit.
Well, let me tell you a story. You know, my first comeback track, Zord, which I did recently, right, in about 2000, during lockdown. You know who the most, you know who listened to it the most? Gore did.
Gore, yeah.
Gore loved it. My manager at work, his kids and him, they had that song on repeat.
Well, there you are. There you go.
They had the song on repeat, and they said, "All right, but you know, I thank you. I send them out some merch. I said, guys, thank you. I'm only an independent artist. Then it, you know, I sent them out some merch and stuff, just to say thank you, because they listen to you on you know how you got Apple Music, you got Amazon Amazon Music. They listen to you on that, and the figures on Amazon Music were high because of them.
I was working on a track. We just re-released one of our old tracks called Nashid the Abundable. They were DJ Vix, right? Great producer, great guy, yeah? When we were working on this song, right, and we were discussing it, how we're going to do it, to change it from how it used to sound. And I said to Vix, look, Vix, I think you should use some of the old pieces of the music that we used before, right, and kind of work them into the song, because they were really different. What we did with that track was very different musically as well. And he said, Baji, I don't think we're going to play any pieces in there except for a tumbilik. I said, why? He said, what happens is, I just go, if the singer stops singing, right, on a track, the music piece should be very small, because if it goes on for too long, kids don't know what's going on in the song anymore. He said, they get lost. You see them looking at you, thinking, what is this? Where's the singer gone? Why is the singer singing? Or why is the beat stopped or something like that? You know, it's kind of throws people on the dance floor. So if you listen to this new version of this song, Nashidi Bandbul, there's no pieces in it except probably Bumbi Licks. And I was thinking, well, what's happening to people? Why are they becoming so dumbed down when it comes to music?
You know, I that's a really good point, because when I produce tracks, I'm still old school. Like, I'll listen to you guys. So, like, I'd put like a 2-3 bar piece in between each verse, and even in my tracks, even today, I'm still doing that. I got back into production recently, so I was producing the other day, and I actually, what could piece should I do here? But then now that you mentioned that point, I'm thinking, should I include it or not?
Yeah. You know, let me give you an example how much I'm into music, right? We did a show just a few weeks ago called One Last Dance, right? Amarjit Sidhu, big time promoter from back in the day. There was DCS, Apna Sangeet, Serge Sahota, and Mangal Singh, right? And Pretty Cool. And Sahota's was one of my favorite bands, right?
Unbelievable.
And the thing with Sahota's is some of their music pieces were amazing. Soon as their music used to play, you know, that music would, I'd get goosebumps. And I'd go, amazing, you know, the sound and what he's playing, the way he's played it, and the rhythm and everything. All through his set, I was standing side of stage, right? And I was dancing all the way through his set, off stage, around the side, so no one could see me. And I loved it. And every time his music would play, my I'd have goosebumps all over my arms. You know, it was just amazing. And that music, you need that music in those songs, because those music intervals are as important as the vocals and what the vocals are saying. And they're equally as part of that song, you know. As soon as that song, Dangadita Akhiyane, Sahota song.
Phenomenal. Even today, that's iconic, isn't it?
I'm going to get goosebumps now. I'll get tingles now, you know what? Oh, that just sends you know what I mean? Yeah. Your body just can't stand still. Oh, those songs are amazing. And those, you know, and that's just Sahota's. And there's so many more examples out there for other bands as well. You know, those music pieces are an integral part of the song itself. And to lose that kind of structure to songs, it's a shame. It's a shame.
It's happened in Bollywood as well, isn't it? They don't use it in there now. Well, but maybe you have stuff like Goddess. That's not there anymore.
Yeah, look at that stuff. What an identity.
Yeah.
That those music pieces are identities of those songs.
Yeah.
You know, and to not have them, just have a simple tumbi lick in every bloody song, you know, or a thud, just, is that the lead piece? Is that it really, boys? Come on. And it's down to the producers of the music. It's down to those boys to pick the level up again. You know, not dumb it down so much, not make it so easy.
Well, this is my opinion. Like, I think in the UK, we should be doing our own thing, not copy people. Do our own thing, and then we'll slowly start getting back.
Yeah, that's what it is. We've got to give that music to the listeners for them to start appreciating it again.
Yeah, and it needs to start from the top. The top producers here needs to start from there, because then everyone else will start doing it.
Yeah, those boys need to start doing it, and then, you know, music make music intelligent again.
Yeah.
People will start to listen to it and they start appreciating music for what it is again. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not just about dancing. Bhangra is there. Bhangra is the genre. Bhangra serves its purpose, right? But there is so much more to Punjabi music than just da ga da ga da ga da ga da. You know, there's so much more to it.
100% agree.
Yeah, definitely.
So I'm not going to take up more of your time. One last question. When's your new music coming out after this?
Well, I'm working on stuff at the moment now with a few different producers, yeah? So there's stuff in the pipeline. Just keep watching this space and there'll be something out very soon.
Yeah, and any last message, any last words for the listeners, guys?
Well, you know, like we've been talking about, you know, I would hate to see the UK music scene just fizzle out and die, right? So please, guys out there, whoever you are, wherever you are, come out, make some noise, you know, and learn your craft properly. Spend time learning to sing, spend time learning your instrument. But please come out there, expose yourself, make music, you know, get in touch with me, get in touch with Raj, get in touch with people who can help you along your journey. We're always there to help. Just pick up the phone, make a phone call. You can get in touch with us. Our emails are all over the place. Phone numbers are all over the place. Just pick the phone. If you need help, get in touch with me and I can put you on the path. But please come out, make some UK musicians, singers, artists, make some noise again. Please, yeah.
100%. Let's bring it back, guys. So thank you so much, Shin, for your time. And honestly, I'm so sorry I've gone over. It's just that I've been talking to you all day. So
like I said, let's link over a cup of desi cha, make a nice cup of desi cha.
Absolutely, 100%.
We'll have a good chat.
All right. Yeah? Thank you so much. God bless you.
No problem. Bye. Thank you.
So, guys, thank you so much for listening. And that is the podcast with Shin. And if you can like, share, leave your review, leave your feedback, that'd be great. So thank you. God bless you all.